everyone. Welcome to Talking Tech. I'm Stephen Jolly. With me online from Vision Australia's Gosford Centre is adaptive technology consultant David Woodbridge. David, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And I probably really should confess that I'm actually not in the centre today. I'm currently sitting at my backyard under my pergola because I'm still on holidays. But I thought I better not miss out Talking Tech for this week.
No, well, you've got much better weather to be outside under the pergola than where I am at the moment. It's hovering around 40 degrees. But
No, it's a beautiful 26 degrees Celsius on the Central Coast.
You've got yourself a new watch.
I have. Now, this is the one that I mentioned probably a little bit last year, but basically it's turning the iPod Nano 6th generation. Now, for people that might remember, the current version of the iPod Nano is the 7th generation, which is the touchscreen one as well. But the iPod Nano 6th generation was actually a little square iPod Nano with a little touchscreen in front of it. Of course, it had VoiceOver built in and a little shirt clip on the back of it or clothing clip. But what I bought from eBay, or my wife bought me for Christmas, was a $13 watch band. So what you basically do is you take the sort of the little aluminium housing apart, you clip the iPod Nano 6th generation inside it, screw it back together, and I've literally now got a watch, so to speak, on my wrist, which is a Nano, and it's got a nice leather band. And because the iPod Nano doesn't have an internal speaker, I've had to plug my headphones into it, but it means that I've now got a MP3 player, a audio book reading program, a pedometer, and my FM radio all on my wrist, so every time I want to use it, I just get my headphones out of my pocket that I normally use for my iPhone, plug them in, and I'm ready to go. And for the last couple of months, because of the test matches are on, I've listened to the whole five test matches in the last one day between Australia and England, all done on my iPod Nano, on my wrist, as my, so I call it, my own smartwatch from Apple.
And what's the size of the device?
It's pretty tiny. It's basically a 1.5-inch diameter screen. So it's probably as big as a fairly chunky talking watch. It's probably just a stick, but it's definitely a proper square. And the touch gestures are quite easy to do because they're normal ones that people that use iPhones and iPads are used to. So you flick left and right to move item by item, and you won't think a double tap to activate something. The only issue is because the aluminium housing is sort of around the outside of the Nano, if you like, you have a very narrow field of which to do your swipes in, if you like.
Mm.
So you've got to flick inside this, you know, square aluminium box, if you like. So that is a little bit restrictive, but because it all talks and I can flick around and double tap stuff, it still works pretty well. It does have nice wallpaper, so it does look like a watch on your wrist, which I can't be bothered with, of course, because I can't see them. But it really does work. So I'm hoping this year, since I've resisted buying a new iPhone and a new iPad, that a real talking smartwatch thing will appear from Apple this year, and we're definitely diving in there and buying one if it does end up being available this year, or indeed if it actually exists at all.
And how much memory does it have in it?
The iPod Nano, the one that I had, the 6th generation, was 8 gigs. You can also get a 16 gig one. So when I checked them out, pricing them on eBay, the Nano's 6th generation, the 8 gig was between $50 and $60.
Mm.
And the 16 gig was about $80 to $90.
Yeah, quite remarkable.
Yeah, and the fact that I can also use them as a USB stick. So I've got it, so I can take it off my wrist, plug into my Windows machine on my Mac, copy files to it. So I've also got a USB stick available with me at all times as well.
You got yourself a new Kindle too.
I did. Now, I know we talked about the accessible Kindle Fire HDX last year and the fact that Amazon was making it all accessible, but I really do well and truly have one. Got one for Christmas. In fact, I actually got it a bit before Christmas, but my wife said I couldn't play with it until Christmas Day. And basically, the gestures are very similar.
I'm glad there are some controls in your life. I think that's what I heard.
I was quite impressed I was able to resist it. Mind you, if it would have been an Apple product, I might have been sneaking a bit of look at it more while my wife was out, though.
Yes.
The gestures are very similar to the iOS devices. So you flick left and right to go item by item with TalkBack, the screen reader. you won't think a double tap to activate something. But I must admit, the one thing that confused me completely when I first got it is, if you can imagine, at the top of the screen you have a set of rows. So you've got things like apps, books, audio, music, and so on. And what happens is, when you double tap on that, in the middle of the screen, the content updates to what you just tapped on and are the most recent items for that content. So, for example, if I double tap on audiobooks, then the middle of the screen is from my most recent to my oldest audiobook. If I double tap on books, the Kindle app actually comes up and it's most recent to my oldest book that I can then double tap on. The same for apps and so on. But until I actually realized that was happening, I was getting completely lost, because I thought, hang on a minute, where did this come from in the middle of the screen?
Yes, that's interesting. It would be confusing.
So what Kindle refers that to as the carousel, because it rotates depending on what you've tapped at the top of the screen. So if you tapped on the apps, the carousel is for your most recent apps. If you've tapped on the books, it's your most recent books on that carousel in the middle. And then once you've gone into, in this case, say a book, what you then get is, you can just do a two-finger swipe down and that will start the built-in speech talking to you, versus the actual screen reading speech that you'd use to navigate the Kindle Fire itself. If you do tap on the screen, you can switch it from this continuous reading mode to line, page, screen reading, proper screen reading navigation mode. And at sometimes when I first started using this, I kept accidentally switching between both of them, which got a bit confusing.
That could get confusing with the two different voices too, couldn't it?
It does a little bit, particularly when both of the voices are the same. So what I've done on mine is I've changed my screen reading voice to be the Australian voice. So I think it's Karen. And then the built-in voice, I can't remember what her name is, but it's a different voice. So I can tell that I've accidentally switched between the continuous reading voice in the Kindle book itself versus just straight navigation with the screen reading voice. And then you have these gestures that people that use Android phones will be familiar with. So you do things like flick down the screen and to the left with one finger to go back to the home page, or you flick up and to the right and so on. One of the most weird commands, though, that I'm still trying to get my head around is, for people that use the iPhone, you might be familiar with the rotor, where you do a two-finger rotate to access things like character and word navigation. Well, on the Kindle, what you do is you do a flick from the right to the middle of the screen, down, take your finger off, touch the middle of the screen, draw a circle, and then when you hear the element you want to navigate by, you take your finger off the screen.
And then you scratch your forehead and think, what have I just done?
Correct, because sometimes it doesn't work.
There's a bit to learn.
It is a bit to learn and a bit confusing. But on the whole, I think it's a really, really good start. And Amazon, like all mainstream companies, should be applauded for their implementation. I just think they could do a little bit better with some of the gestures, because they are a bit weird. Overall accessibility, you've got screen reader and screen magnification, a bit of mono audio for people with hearing issues. I would say you'd have to be a reasonably and confident user of gesturing on a touchscreen to be comfortable with it. It's definitely not for a beginner, and if I had a choice for a blind person between an iPad and a Kindle, I'd still go for an iPad. If you're an experienced low vision user or an experienced blind screen reading touchscreen user, like I said, then the Kindle's fine. You can run some Android applications, not all, but just as a warning, it will take some getting used to.
Very, very interesting. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes into the future too, in a year's time, how the comparison between the Apple devices and the Amazon Kindle devices goes as well.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to talk to you briefly about your book, and we might have to spend more time on this in the future. This is a very interesting development.
Yes. Now, last year, Apple started talking to me about me producing my own iBook, and that's available through the iTunes iBook store. Basically what it is I had to start using a thing called iBooks Author, which I use to produce the electronic book or the e-book. And during that process, I came up with quite a few of different accessibility issues that I had to overcome to even write the book in the first place. And I'm now working with Apple to get some of those issues ironed out in the actual authoring program. And when it came to actually releasing the book onto the iBooks store itself, there's still some issues with scrolling with VoiceOver on an iPad mini. It's fine on the full-size iPad. If you're using VoiceOver, if you're not using VoiceOver, of course, the book's absolutely fine. You can navigate it, no problem at all. And I'll be a little bit quiet about the book being available, but then I thought, well, the more people who read it and the more people that give feedback to Apple, the more it pushes Apple to not only make iBooks Author more accessible for everyone, but also make sure that the checks in place are in there so that somebody who's completely blind can verify that their book is fully accessible without having to rely on sighted people feedback. But the book basically covers getting started with most of the Apple products that are accessible. So that includes the iPod Nano, the iPod Shuffle, the Apple TV. I sort of snuck in the iPod Classic, which is not really talking at all, but you can get navigated by the clicks on the screen with a click wheel. And then, of course, all the iOS devices, iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad, the Mac. I talk about my favorite Mac apps, my favorite iOS, iPhone apps, et cetera. Favorite hardware that I tend to use, my trip through time with adaptive technology over the last 30 years. And then I wind it up by talking about how the whole Apple range that I use at home allows me to interact with my family from a purely technology point of view. So the book is actually called IC. That's lowercase I, capital S, lowercase EE, so IC. And in iTunes, if you stick in IC or IC space David Woodbridge, you'll find my book. It's definitely not accessible on the iPhone or iPod Touch because it is written in iBooks Author. So like I said, it's only available on the iPad.
It's free?
It's free. I made a decision not to charge it for the moment because it has some accessibility limitations. And for me, I can't put my audio content in it independently myself. For the first couple of versions, while we're ironing out all these accessibility issues, that's why I decided to charge nothing for it. And it's about 200 pages in total.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting read. IC, all you need to know for getting started with Apple products from a blind person's perspective, and available through the iTunes store. And as you say, if you just type in IC space David Woodbridge, it'll turn up and can be downloaded for free. And I guess you're really interested in people exploring it and giving you feedback about their accessibility experience with it, because you'll know it from the very start, from the authoring right through to the reading. You'll be able to give some good guidance to Apple.
That's correct, Dan. Even in the introduction to the book, I've actually asked people to please contact me in regards to any accessibility issues, because this is my first time at even doing it myself. And I really did try and do it as independently as possible. So there are bound to be some accessibility issues. But again, it's all part of a learning process. I mean, we give feedback to authors developing apps. So I thought, well, this is my chance for particularly clients of Vision Australia to give me feedback about an accessible book, which still has some challenges. But, you know, as we work all together and this is a book for the whole community, the better off it'll be in the end. So even if you want to use my email address at Vision Australia, you can just email david.woodbridge@visionaustralia.org.
david.woodbridge@visionaustralia.org. Good on you, David. A terrific initiative. I'm sure people are really going to appreciate it, and it'll be great to see the development, because you'll end up with a pretty good process in the finish, I'm sure, and it's pretty good to start with. David Woodbridge, Adaptive Technology Consultant with Vision Australia. This has been Talking Tech. I'm Stephen Jolly.